89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. But with AI tools popping up everywhere, how do you separate the helpful from the hype? The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. With over 15 years of experience building responsible, secure AI, Grammarly isn't just another AI communication assistant. It's how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. Designed to fit the needs of business, Grammarly is backed by a user-first privacy policy and industry-leading security credentials. This means you won't have to worry about the safety of your company information. Grammarly also emphasizes responsible AI, so your company can avoid harmful bias. See why 70,000 teams and 30 million people trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise. That's grammarly.com/enterprise. Grammarly, enterprise-ready AI.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the show. This is Véronique on High Vibes and a Mic. Today I have a guest. His name is Ra Neja and he's an ardent Buddhist monk. So Ra quit a six-figure Silicon Valley tech job to mentor awakening souls toward enlightenment, and he became a monk. His mission is to uplift the consciousness of the world by helping the millions of bright beings who are awakening to their divinity. He struggled through years of dark night of the soul. We're going to talk about that. And on his path to self-realization, he hit rock bottom and recognized that this suffering was actually a blessing that helped him see a repeating pattern because he remembered his past life. This insight was a calling to start a spiritual awakening mentorship program and a loving community to support awakening souls through this often difficult journey. So let's hear it from Ra, and don't forget to follow me on Instagram at High Vibes on the Mic. Hi, welcome back to the show. This is Véronique on High Vibes on the Mic, and I'm with Ra today. How are you, Ra?
I'm great, Véronique. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Thank you for coming. And I have a lot of questions for you. And I'm sure my audience is going to love the conversation. So first, I want to talk about how your journey is so fascinating, how it started. So I read that you were tech. You worked in the tech industry for a while. And now you are an ordained Buddhist monk. So can you please share with us, you know, how did that happen?
Yeah, life has been beautiful in the way it shifts and changes. So I actually joined this whole technology thing because I was interested in spirituality. That's how it actually happened, because meditation expressed in the form of computer programming was one of the practices that I learned from a Buddhist teacher. And I know it may seem like very different. You know, usually people think, oh, you sit down to meditate, you close your eyes and you do some mudras with your hands, right? But there is a way you can meditate with almost anything. And this form of meditation is a new kind of modernized form of the classical technique of holding a mandala. In Buddhism, Buddhist monks visualize these complex shapes, geometrical shapes called mandalas, and it becomes a practice that develops your focus and concentration. So you can do the same when you are really focusing on, you know, building a computer program, which can be quite complex. There is a lot of relational things where, you know, you have to understand where this little piece of code works with the rest of the code and how things work. And you hold it all in your mind as you create it. And that becomes a new form of practice while also supporting your practical life.
Uh-huh.
So spirituality, when it doesn't really help you bring balance in a practical way, it can have tendency of not working in the modern world. A lot of the people have ideas about spirituality which are very impractical, right? So actually earning a good amount of money through software engineering helped me, you know, create a space in which I could follow my spiritual path with less worries about paying bills and what's going to happen, right? If you're sitting down to meditate and all you're thinking about is your electricity bill, it's really hard.
Well, yeah. That's quite different, you know, from anything I heard before. Like I said, you have a fascinating journey. So maybe we have to tell our audience before we continue that at the age of 5, you became a clairvoyant. You really had spirituality coming to you, and that you could communicate with ascending masters.
Mm-hmm.
So can you go further with it? Can you explain, you know, how everything started actually?
Yes. So, you know, to really talk about where everything started, it was even before I was born, because I decided to come to this earth to continue my work with spiritual awakening, to get awakened and help others awaken, because I've been doing this for many lifetimes, and I remembered those lifetimes. When I was 5 years old, I had these flashes of why I was here, and I became just so emotional. So this actually happened in my grandma's house in South India, in a little village which revolved around a temple. So I woke up one evening and I was just, you know, pulled to come to the front of the house where we could see this temple. And we have these beautiful big windows, and just coming there, something in me really became emotional and remembered why I am here on this earth. And I started crying and asking Divine Mother, which is my way of addressing God at that time, "Divine Mother, I want to do my work right now. I don't want to wait anymore. I have wasted lifetimes when I came here and forgot why I came here. So please don't let me forget this lifetime." That's why I became emotional, because I saw how we do this. We forget our higher purpose and we get pulled into all these little things that don't really matter to us. That's why we feel meaningless. That's why we feel somehow, you know, all that you're doing is very temporary and doesn't matter too much. So that was the first spiritual awakening or remembrance of my past lives. And of course, what happened, even with all that prayer and everything, I had a rebellious teenage and I forgot again. This is the work we do. We forget and we remember. We forget and we remember.
Well, and, it's a lot for 5 years old also, if you think about it. You know, you had your awakening at 5. That's a lot. And I'm not even sure how you comprehended everything at that age.
Yeah. And I'm grateful that somehow life brought it back to me, this remembrance. So, about when I was 9 or 10, I was like deeply into my father's work. I could start seeing auras and chakras when I was really really young, but I started working as an apprentice of my father, who was a great healer. He helped about a million people in India, and he was on TV, and he was considered a great teacher by thousands of people, would come to him. And, you know, it was a very different life that I led. But for me, it was very normal.
Yeah.
So I, you know, my father could see, my mother could see sometimes, but I could see everybody's chakras and auras and even tell people where they were lacking energy, what kind of problems they had with their health. And I was guided by these ascended masters to heal people in ways that are suitable for each person. It was different. So and all that, you know.
Sorry, that was as a child or as a teenager?
Was as a child.
As a child already, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, in the teenager phase, I kind of rebelled and forgot everything again. And had I wanted nothing to do with God or anything. So, yeah, but then again, life brought me back. It's like these waves of ups and downs in every way happened again and again and again to me, which is the reason I have experienced these places of feeling really away from God.
Mm-hmm.
And then feeling like, oh, God is within me. So this kind of triggered my dark night of the soul. I speak about that quite a lot.
Yeah, that's because, true. But,
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. A lot of people are going through that right now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the first person I talked about the dark night of the soul. I had some people explaining their own experience. Basically, is it like a depression that you go through before your awakening? I mean, how was it for you?
Yeah, dark night of the soul is a huge part of spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And people think it's a curse. God hates you. Or something's wrong with you. But I realized after going through it a bunch of times that this is God's way of bringing me closer back to God. So, in Christian terms, Saint John of the Cross, who was a 13th century poet and saint, and he was the one who really coined this word, dark night of the soul. He wrote a poem by this name. And that seminal work, it's not a short one, it's really long. It's a book. In that work, he talks about how the dark night of the soul is actually God purifying you to bring you back to God. And that's exactly what happens when you have attached yourself to these little temporary things, when you have attached yourself to your false identity, even though it's a beautiful personality you have as a human being, and you know there is so much joy in life and all that. If we forget about who we truly are, our divine identity, eventually it's like we are not doing what we are here to do, which is discover who we truly are. So these phases of going through all these difficulties is there to remove the things that you hold, the little things you're grasping on to, so that you can receive the bigger gift of God.
But that's something you will go through if you're, I'm not going to say looking for it, but if you're on your way, on your path to be more spiritual, right? Because people are just going to live their lives and they don't believe in anything. They won't know about that dark night of the soul. That's what I think, right? But when you're ready and you're like, okay, I need something new in my life, or I need to remember who I was, something like that. Is that something that will definitely happen to you before you go on the other side?
Sometimes people start seeking, you know, seeking God, and then it may happen when they're on the path, but sometimes it may be really unexpected. And for a lot of people, especially, you know, the stories I've heard from my students, etc., Sometimes it's heartbreak. Sometimes it's loss. Sometimes it's something difficult that they did not expect that triggers the dark night of the soul, which kind of jolts them into looking at life in a new way. And it's not pleasant or expected or decided from the head. So we as human beings have a story in our mind of how our life is going to be. We have a little script, right? And we think this is how it's going to be. And we just want this and we don't want that. And we have all these ideas about who we are. But the divine plan, the grander plan that God has for you can be very different. And when we are not in touch with the divine plan, we sometimes have no clue how it's going to manifest. And it just kind of takes place, and things can be hard to understand at that point.
Do you think each of us have like a mission on Earth? Like doing something not really important, but we all here for something? Mm.
Each of us is here for a greater purpose. And you can call it a mission, but it's really very simple. It is to discover who you are. You are here to discover your spiritual nature, but by being human. Mm-hmm. You're here to discover what you are not as well as what you are. Because how you discover your divinity, which is like all encompassing, you know, you are true love. You have unconditional love and joy, and you are complete in yourself when you arrive. But then you become human and you discover your limited nature first. You discover your temporary nature, all the things that come and go, the little things which we hold on to thinking they are the most important. We put our hopes and dreams into these things, and inevitably we lose them, right? And that gaining and losing of these temporary things makes us realize that there is actually something really permanent that does not come and does not go, because it was always there. And that is our divine nature. And it's really hard to get in touch with that without these ups and downs to contrast, because that's the one that does not change.
Okay. So when people finally get their spiritual awakening, sometimes they can be confused, they don't know really what's going on, they can feel lost. Is there any like common mistake that you've seen that you can help you, but they can avoid?
Yes, the most common mistake I see that gets people stuck for the longest time is self-sabotage.
Oh, yes, that's a big one.
And this happens in so many levels, in so many subtle ways that it's hard to notice. And even when we are being blessed by God, being invited to step into the light, what we do is we become actually afraid of it and run away from it.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily. We think that's the cause of our problems, this blessing that is being showered upon by God. But actually, in embracing that blessing, you can be free of all difficulties. But it's not about really being free of difficulties. It's about, even when there are difficulties, to see the divinity in it, to accept all that as a blessing and simply be in the light of God, your own light. I mean, there is no separation between God and you. Your soul and spirit are one. That is why in so many religions you'll see this again and again. The kingdom of God is within you.
Beautiful. I mean, two things I make me think when you say that is, first of all, some people sometimes they don't think they deserve the blessing of God, and they self-sabotage themselves for sure. And also, when something bad happened to you, at the time when it happened, you think it's the end of the world, but maybe like 10 years later, you think about it and you realize that, oh, if that didn't happen, that good thing that you have right now will have never happened either.
Yeah.
So it's not all the time, but several times, you know, in my life, I know that now when I look back and I think, okay, I know why that happened now. So, and at the time the bad thing happened, I was completely devastated. So, yeah. Totally agree with you.
Yes, yes.
So what advice would you give someone experiencing like a spiritual awakening and they're having issues? They cannot balance, you know, happiness. They cannot find a sense of purpose. So do they have to just take their time?
So one thing I can say, the problem with when you are in these difficult situations, you are at the highest level of self-sabotage. You keep yourself in that because your ego is fighting divinity. You have to notice that. And there is a lot of tendency to try to do this alone. You feel there is some kind of a reward if you do it alone. You feel that it's kind of, I don't know why, but it feels like, oh, this is me, you know. But there is no honor, there's no reward for doing it alone at all. And you are unnecessarily suffering because your ego is tricking you to think that way. Your ego is tricking you into thinking if you do it alone, there is some sort of greatness for your ego. And it's actually the opposite of humility. The humility way, the humble way, which is not like the smaller way, but the humble way is the open way. Humble, the word may not be right for what we are referring to, but humility is not just being smaller than everybody else. Humility is the ability to see things as they are, see the divinity in all that is. And when you see that God is giving you this gift, what is best to do is to open up and receive help. So one thing I can say for somebody going through this is to really try to understand what is happening, why it's happening, really see it from the right perspective. And that can be really hard because there are so many conflicting pieces of information on the internet and so much wrong advice.
I know.
And it's so misleading. Even when it's well-intentioned, it can be really misleading and people have no idea. So find somebody who really understands what's happening with you. The best thing you can do is to get a mentor and a community, because that's what really finally helped me. I did everything else, tried to do it by myself, tried to, you know, exercise and meditate. And, you know, I was feeling so depressed. I was feeling so meaningless that I didn't want to live anymore.
Oh.
Even though I had such a beautiful family, I had so many friends who loved me. I had an upcoming career in the movies. I was playing the lead role I've played many lead roles in movies, and I was a photographer. You know, I was so extroverted. I was like the life of the party when I was with people. And at the same time, I felt so alone. And I couldn't talk about this to anybody. And back then, it was not like you could go to the internet and find a community and all that. And I just felt even my closest friends wouldn't get what I said. I felt judged even by them. So I just stopped, you know, talking with people about this and kind of solidified in my little isolation.
So when was the moment that you finally, you know, went on to the other side and you found your mentor and decided to become a monk? Because from tech to all those many careers and, I mean, a lot of friends and nice family to making the decision, okay, I'm going to become a monk and I'm going to help people.
Yeah. So I initially decided to become a monk, which didn't happen when I was about 17 or 18. I wanted to run away from home and, you know, leave everything. And I was like, I want God. I don't want anything else. But my mother convinced me not to do that. Actually, I didn't want to tell my mother, but there is a spiritual guide who, you know, channels information. And there is a saint called Shirdi Sai Baba who has been a big figure in my life, guiding me in many ways. So in order to speak to Shirdi Sai Baba, I asked, and then I got the answer, you should wait for 5 years, because if you run away to a monastery now, what you will find is there is more politics in a monastery than... So, and you're not going to be happy if you go there. You're not going to find the true path, but I will guide you and help you find the true path. So this was really eye-opening for me. So I stayed home and started looking for a teacher, started looking for a mentor. But I didn't want any simple teacher who just knew stuff. I wanted an enlightened teacher who could really experience God and, you know, help me experience God. Otherwise, you know, if my teacher didn't, you know, experience it themselves, how could they help me?
Yeah.
And I looked and looked and looked for many years. It was about 6 or 7 years after searching that I found my first enlightened teacher. And between this gap is when I went through the deepest dark night of the soul.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay.
And like I was feeling nothing else I was doing was meaningful at all. And you know, this is when I had my film career, the photography and all that in between. Because, you know, with acting also, whatever I tried to do, I was like, this can be maybe a way for me to discover who I am. Acting was obviously for me a way that God presented, because it felt like by acting out who I was, different aspects of myself, I was discovering different sides that I had kind of pushed down and suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can in some way discover who I am through that. But that was very limited in its ability to really give me what I want. But it did help me quite a lot. And I found my first teacher. I didn't become a monk then. After 3 or 4 years of my studying with that teacher, then I found my Buddhist mysticism teacher. My first teacher was in Advaita Vedanta, which is non-duality. There are a lot of non-dual teachers now, even in the West, but it all began in India. And this is where everything is one comes from. This is where the concept of Maya and all that comes from. So, yeah, after 3 or 4 years of being with my first teacher, where I had also my deepest spiritual awakenings, which shook my world upside down, turned everything upside down. And that's also when I went through even more dark night of the soul, because I saw the light so strongly that everything else in contrast seemed much darker. There were actually these experiences which were so strong, I had to rethink life all over again. And I became like reborn, like a baby who couldn't walk, couldn't talk. I had to rethink everything. So that was a time when I also didn't have the teacher with me to support, because he lived in Germany, I lived in India. And that distance made it so that I didn't have any support, even though I had a teacher and I didn't have a community. So after 3 or 4 years, when I met my Buddhist mysticism teacher, is when there was a lot more community elements. People were regularly at least meeting on Zoom and from far away and all that. So I found a lot of support then. But yeah, community was a huge part of this.
How long have you been a monk?
This was in 2019 when I
went that long. Okay. Yeah. Are you within a community, or is it more, I don't know. it's beyond your own.
Yeah, it's like a hybrid way of being a monk. It's not like a monk who, you know, when you become a monk, you don't do anything that normal people do. You shave all your hair off and you just take the vows of this and this and this, and you don't do this, you don't do that. This way of becoming a monk is, in your heart, you dedicate your life to spiritual awakening. And different people do it to different degrees. But for me, that was the total thing. Everything I did, even when I was doing software programming and all that, it was because of spiritual awakening. I didn't care about anything else, really. So for me, it was a total dedication to my spirit. But it didn't, you know, in our school and lineage, there was no, you shouldn't live life because you're a monk.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, use all of your life to dedicate it to your spiritual path. And yeah, people live normal lives. Most others who have been initiated monks, they meditate. You know, they have a regular job, whatever kind. Some of them are married. Some of them are not. A lot of them are, you know, single and pursuing spiritual things. But some of them are married. Some of them have children.
Okay, I didn't even know that. That's new for me.
Yeah, there are like different kinds of being a monk, but this way was actually much better, because the first way that I wanted to try was extreme.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, complete negation of the rest of my life. But this way is actually more balanced. In Buddhism, there is a lot of emphasis on the middle path, where you don't go to this extreme or this extreme, but you do what is practical, what works. But my teacher took it even to, you know, he modernized it even more, that you know, you can actually do things that work in the practical world. But when you do them, you have the right intent to make that a part of your spiritual life. And then it transforms your practical life as well as your spiritual life. So there is no conditioning against money. A lot of spiritual people have really this kind of bad relationship with money, and I did too.
Yeah.
Because I felt, you know, it's noble to be poor.
I don't think God wants us to be poor.
Yes. Yes.
I think that's his plan. Mm-hmm. We have to have humility, of course, but I don't think, you know, I'm supposed to suffer that much on this earth.
Yes, it's a misunderstanding that you need to be poor. When you have poverty and you receive it as a gift, that you don't have any physical things, but even then God supports you in some way. You are able to use that as a path to humility, then poverty can serve you. But if you use poverty as a way of strengthening in your victimhood, which most people do, and it doesn't serve you at all. So it's better for you to be powerful and humble.
Yeah. That's exactly what, you know, I'm thinking. Yeah.
Yes.
So you can help more people.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, it's practical that in this world, it's so different than how it was 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
When if you were a monk in India, in India, it still even works. Forget about it in the West. if you are a monk and people see you have a begging bowl and you ask for alms, they will feed you. In India, there are places where it still happens. I have lived with, you know, street monks, and I have slept on the side of the road and made friends with them. I wanted to experience how it is to be like that. And, you know, it's so joyful because you have nothing to worry about. You're absolutely free. And you just sleep on the side of the road and, you know, somehow life takes care of you.
No worries.
No worries at all. And it has its own beauty, but you don't. It's much more powerful, like when I can afford to have a laptop and this microphone and this internet connection, this place to live, so I can do my work. I can sit down to meditate. I can help a lot more people who find me online. And, you know, I'm creating a lot of YouTube videos these days which go in-depth about spiritual awakening. Like today, I made a 1 hour and 8 minute long video, which talks about how you can get enlightened.
So how can people actually get their spiritual, you know, awakening into everyday life, especially in that modern world, because we're talking about this modern world. So how can you use your spirituality like this every day?
So spirituality is not separate from our life. People think spirituality is exclusive. And spirituality, in the beginning, a lot of the people think, oh, you don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do this. You don't eat these things, you don't drink these things, you have kind of a narrow path, which is exclusion of yourself from all these bad things. That may be good in the beginning, but as you really progress in your spirituality, what should happen is that you see God in everything. You experience divinity in all that you do, in each breath, in each experience. It's a divine experience. And you see how life changes after that. It blooms as if you become one with all that is. You experience how there is a blessing even in difficult things. So what happens eventually is you just let go. You let God lead your life. And you're talking, you're walking, you're everything. Your job becomes your meditation. Now your interaction with people becomes your interaction with God. And then actually there is no separation between spirituality and your practical life at all. It becomes so integrated. The light of your awakening spreads to all areas of your life, of your being.
Yeah. Letting go is a big thing also. Kind of, it's one of the parts very hard to do. And you were saying you did a video today to help people, to teach people. And I read on your website that you mentioned teaching mystical practices. Can you tell us about how can that help the awakening also?
Yes, these mystical practices are ways where there are some kind of hidden ways that may not be obvious to most people. And that's not because it's some big secret. It's only because most people are so attached to the 3D reality.
Yeah.
That they don't see the hidden world of energy that's always here. And a mystical practice is to learn to tap into this hidden world of energy and power and light to progress faster on your spiritual path, and also to help you in so many different ways, in practical ways as well. And all of this is to be used in the service of your spiritual path.
You have to drink something, or do you have to do some kind of prayers or meditation?
No, it's mostly meditation.
Meditation?
It's mostly meditation with different techniques and all that.
Okay.
Using chakras is one way. There are, like, in my mentorship, I have different practices weekly. When somebody joins, they go through step by step different practices which help them understand and see these different dimensions of light. But also when we do these weekly meetings, like I meditate with my students on Zoom multiple times a week. And what happens in each of these meditations, I do something called an energy transmission, which helps them see beyond just the physical stuff. And people experience their own light in multiple ways. You know, you can hear all sorts of sharings that people do after these meditations. And they kind of slowly become more and more and more open to this mystical world of energy and chakras and all this light and beauty, which they were missing so much from their life because they didn't have awareness of that. So eventually you become a fuller human being, because most people are just limited into these 3D realities and they don't know that they are like multidimensional beings. And that's my work, to awaken you to your fullness.
I took a class like this, and I think I don't know if I'm scared or if my mind is really closed, but it was really hard for me to let go. And it was toward the end, I was finally able to see what she was talking about. The teacher was talking about colors, how to see colors, how to read somebody else, you know, with colors. And I was like, I think I see yellow. And she's like, yeah, it's yellow. So I'm like, okay, I saw something, but that was it. So I think for me, it would take a lot of, you know, let go and don't be scared of what you can feel or see, you know.
Yes. So the difference between what I do and a lot of other practitioners out there is I don't help people to develop these things for the sake of developing these things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Most people are like, oh, I'll teach you to read chakras and auras. When people come to me, I want to learn to do this. I'm like, why do you want to learn that? What is the reasoning behind it?
Yeah.
Because if you do it just for the sake of developing these special powers, what happens is you forget about the real goal. You forget why you have these powers in the first place. There are so many amazing people who started awakening and got stuck in beautiful places.
Mm-hmm.
They got stuck and enamored by all these powers that started waking up, and that became their life, and then they didn't progress after that. So because for me these were so normal since my childhood, it didn't feel like a special thing so much, but it's something that I had to dedicate towards the service of my spirit, and then use it only when it's the right etiquette to use it. So even though I have these abilities, I don't use them just for fun or for my egoic purposes.
Mm.
Which is what most people do. Not even for my curiosity, right? So I let them be used by my spirit, by God, when it needs to be done. And people ask me all the time, oh, can you check my third eye chakra? Can you read my aura? I'm like, that's not my job. My job is to help you wake up. Mm-hmm. My job is to help you see that you are God. And if you get stuck in these little things, you will eventually, you know, completely lose the way. Just like you were stuck in, you know, the 3D reality, material wealth and these kind of things. It's the same thing.
I saw that you do those meditating, eating. What is that about? I was really surprised. I'm like, what is going on here?
Yes. That's one of the embodied practices that we do. So this is one way you can really go into the depth of energy by using something that's very physical, which is food. Most people think food is only physical and they are completely not in touch with the energetic part of it. And people eat so mindlessly. People eat like they have no connection with their food as they eat. But when you bring your honor, your openness, your gratitude, and some of these mystical ways of connecting with food as you eat, it becomes holy communion. Because that food is imbued with divine energy like everything else. And because you're able to experience food with all your five senses and you put it in your body, you know, you can look at it, you can feel it, you can sense it. And then you can also learn to feel its energy. which is beyond the five senses. What then happens is every bite you eat becomes an opportunity to experience God.
Oh, wow.
Usually how we experience anything is through a lot of filters in our mind. We have so many likes and dislikes and definitions and labels that we don't actually see the thing we are looking at. We only see our labels. But when we actually open those filters and flood your awareness with the real thing that you're eating, it's a direct connection. And any direct experience with reality is an experience with God.
Yeah. Well, something I do that I think really make me feel close to God is yoga. I saw that we were talking about yoga. And I love doing, I discovered Bikram yoga 5 years ago. No, more than that. 6-7 years ago. And I love it. I would love to go every day. And I saw that you seeing that yoga can help people to have enlightenment. So can you help us with that? What do you mean by it? Personally, I think it is. It does.
But yes.
We don't know about that.
So yoga is a word which comes from the ancient Sanskrit, which means becoming one with God.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. All right.
But what has happened over this period of time where yoga has so many aspects to it, right? And one of those aspects is Hatha yoga. And that aspect is to prepare your body, to stabilize your body, to create balance in your body in such a way that you can sit down to meditate for long periods and focus, because that's one of the primary goals, to develop that ability so you can focus on oneness. Focus on one thing which helps you, you know, reveal divinity and become one with it. But what has happened because of the emphasis on the physical, especially in the West, people have lost the real meaning of yoga. And even though, you know, there are different people who practice it to different levels of authenticity, there are sometimes practitioners who don't bring the spiritual aspect of it at all into it. And even when they do, it does not have the full depth or the authenticity. People forget the goal of why it's happening. I'm like, you haven't been given the full download of it, you know, because you were surprised what it meant, really.
I didn't know. The only thing I knew is that the person who introduced me to yoga is a teacher, and he had a very devastating thing happen in his life. He lost half of his family. And he told me, you know, most of the people who come here for that practice, something bad happened to them. And they love doing this kind of yoga because it just makes you feel like a different person when you're done. And definitely when we're done, and it's 90 minutes, I feel really, I feel like clean inside, my mind is clear. It's definitely an experience. I
would recommend anyone. And that's just the beginning.
Okay. Even better.
That's just the beginning of what is the full path of yoga. Is you prepare your mind, you prepare your body, you learn to control your breath to practices like pranayama. And eventually what it's supposed to do is to help you stop your mind, stop your thoughts. So the definition of yoga, from the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, the very first definition that comes is yogas chitta vritti nirodaha in Sanskrit. Yogas chitta vritti nirodaha means yoga is the cessation or the stopping of mind activity. If you notice, your mind is always active normally. Unless you're asleep, your mind is always running to this and this and this. And that is how it continues this narrative that you are a little human being separate from God. That's the ego. So the real goal of yoga is to stop thought, to stop that illusion, so that you can become one with God, which you already are one with God, but you stop the illusion of being separate. And
yeah,
and just the physical yoga is like the first step, really. And people have forgotten all the rest of the steps to take to achieve the true goal of yoga.
Oh, and not being, you know, taught about it. Like, you know, I wasn't. So, although I had some example, because my friend told me, you know, about people doing that because they were sad inside and they make them feel better. But yeah, I mean, I don't know that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And, you know, that's it's a little sad that, in you know, people don't know the full, you know, thing about it. But I'm also really grateful that yoga, even in its very basic forms, even when it's done like you go to the gym or do Pilates or whatever, people equate yoga and Pilates these days, right? And even when it's like so kind of empty of its real thing, it still can become an introduction for somebody to dig deeper if they're interested. They're like, oh, what is this yoga? Let me look it up. And then they start their journey to kind of understand. So it has become a cultural phenomenon. You know, it's all over the world now. So it's really good that it at least introduces people to some form of practice. And if they want to progress, they can, of course, go further.
Is there a kind of yoga you recommend?
I would recommend reading Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. There are many different translations which help you kind of see what's going on. But I haven't practiced, you know, these kind of yogas because my focus was always on the truest yoga. And maybe you can try out different forms and see which one feels deeper and more authentic. Perhaps Kundalini yoga is one thing. Another thing you can read is there are other forms of yoga which do not look like yoga.
Mm-hmm.
There is Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Raja Yoga. These are the main four forms of yoga, which are not physical things. You stand in a pose and all that. Karma Yoga is the path of action. Bhakti Yoga is the path of devotion.
Okay.
You know, and Raja Yoga is the path of meditation. So meditation is a form of yoga. So if you want to practice yoga, I highly recommend meditation. And it's, you know, it's best practiced with a mentor who can give you the full download, because just like, you know, you have been practicing yoga, but you don't really haven't been given the fullness of it. You may practice meditation with an app like Calm or Headspace, and it's not about spiritual awakening at all. It's about learning to sleep.
Right.
Yeah. So it's completely lost its essence.
Well,
so it's you should be really careful who you learn this from.
Yeah, but I mean, it's how all those coaches and mentors, you know, nowadays, you know, on the internet, it's hard to know who and who's doing what. So that's another, another conversation, I guess. So I guess we're out of time. So before we go, can you tell us what kind of classes you offer? And of course, I will put all the information in the show notes. But if people, you know, contact you, how can you help them?
So my life, my work, everything is dedicated to your spiritual awakening. Whoever you are listening, the listener, if you are going through a difficult spiritual awakening, if you are confused, if you don't know why this is happening to you, I know where you are. I know these difficulties very personally. I feel you. And the reason I am a spiritual awakening mentor is because I know how difficult it is. Because I wish at that time somebody would have reached out to me and given me the clarity, understanding that I now have. So because there are millions of people out there who are going through this, I felt called to help people with their spiritual awakening. And I do everything I can to do it. So to help people for free, I create a lot of YouTube videos these days. Some of them really in-depth, like the latest one was more than an hour long and goes in-depth into enlightenment. I have master classes on my website, which go even further, 2 hours long. I have a free app as well with lots of different guided meditations and different teachings there. But if you really want to progress the fastest way, I invite you to work with me and become mentored by me. If you want to progress faster, I'm a spiritual awakening mentor, which means I help you go step by step through this journey and help you awaken to your full potential, which is your divinity, which is what is known as enlightenment. And it may seem esoteric, it may seem far away, but you can do it even while living a full life. It actually helps you live your life more fully. It helps you become a better parent, a better, spouse, better worker, better employer. Whatever you're doing, you can enhance that. So the way I help people is I meet them regularly. We have weekly Zoom guided meditations where people can also ask all their questions. We have Q&A every week. And there's a lot of emphasis on community. My community is what I'm most happy and proud about and makes me smile because I have such a loving and supportive community. When somebody goes through these ups and downs, which happens all the time, there is so much outpouring of support and it brings joy to my heart. So this is what can really help you. If you are going through a dark night of the soul or a difficult or disruptive spiritual awakening, this is the answer. So you don't need to suffer by yourself. You don't need to be stuck in the dark. Open yourself up, open your heart, open your mind, and receive. That is my invitation to you.
Those will be one-on-one or within a group?
So I started helping people one-on-one, but I wanted to help as many people as possible. I help in larger groups and smaller groups. In the larger group, we meet on Sundays and we have, guided meditations and all that and people sharing and all that. But in a smaller group, which is more exclusive, I give personal attention one by one and help them walk through whatever difficulties they're going through. I help them with all these different mystical practices. I lead them by the hand, right? And I support people one-on-one through chat and voice messages because that's, if there is something personal they cannot really ask in a group, there is still a way for them to do that. So this way I can help as many people as possible at multiple levels. Like if somebody goes to my YouTube or listens to a podcast, they'll get a little bit of help, right? But if somebody really wants to do this, then I can kind of really see personally what's going on, what is blocking them, and give them a customized solution or a technique or something that helps them move on.
Okay, that's great. Okay. Well, thank you very much for all these lightning conversation. I loved it. I'm very big, you know, on spiritual awakening, you know, art life, trying to remember who you are, yoga.
Wonderful.
You know, about yoga. And hopefully, you know, people can just reach out to you if they need and watch your videos on YouTube. I will put all the information on the show notes. And I hope we get some feedback to see, you know, help them. And thank you. I really thank you for coming.
Thank you. I enjoyed your questions and your sincerity. And it was such a great conversation. Thank you so much for having me.
It was. Thank you, Ra.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.